I speak to you in the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier. Amen.
Amen.
Well, I am delighted to be with you here at St. Thomas this morning. Thank you for your ministry in this place over many years. Thank you for your commitment to living out the gospel in this community. I'm also grateful for your rector, Michael, and his ministry. He's a very good priest, as I know you know, who cares deeply about this parish, you, and being the church in the world of this time and this place. I'm also grateful for his ministry in the diocese as a whole. He's been involved in a number of ways over the years. It is much appreciated. It's good to be here with all of you. There is this tiny dot of an island off the southwest corner of Ireland known as Skellig Michael. It's basically a barren rock rather than an island, but somehow it holds a mystique and intrigue that has captured people's imagination for hundreds of years. I read about it in, of all places, the travel section of the New York Times in an article written by Christopher Hull. This is part of what he wrote. He said, from spring to early fall for the last 15 years, the ruddy-cheeked carryman, John O'Shea, has ferried passengers across the roiling Atlantic from Derry Name Harbor to Skellig Michael. If conditions permit a landing on the 54-acre crag, and often they don't, passengers must then hop from a pitching boat onto a concrete quay and scale 618 stone steps. The steps are rough, narrow, and slippery when damp, which they usually are, without so much as a flimsy handrail as a barrier between you and oblivion hundreds of feet below. And all this to view a scattering of ruins below the 714-foot summit. Why would anyone brave such a journey, he asked. I guess they're trying to figure out what those guys were doing out there, Mr. O'Shea said. Those guys were monks who used to live on this remote rock from AD 600 to 1200, according to estimates. The article said physical traces of that community remain, battered by wind and rain, but still clinging to the upper reaches of the island. Carved Celtic crosses marking graves, the ruins of a small church, a primitive oratory, and a few beehive-shaped monastic cells painstakingly built of mortarless flat stones in ever-constricting concentric circles. They were relics of a time before rationalism ruled the Western world, when blind faith in the divine was the pole star of life. At least that's what the article said. In what but one sentence, he described his view of the pursuit of monks for about 600 years. They were relics of a time before rationalism ruled the Western world, when blind faith in the divine was the pole star of life. Really? That's all they were doing. Blind faith in the divine invited them to painstakingly traverse very rough waters and build 618 steps up a steep cliff and then build feats of architecture and pray and focus on the divine presence. All really a bit of a waste of time. And that's why hundreds of people make a difficult trip to go and visit the site even now, to observe the ancient relics of a time long ago since past. Just a nice field trip, if you will, but no real relevance to us here and now. Really? Well, no, not really. You see, I have this faith, call me strange, but I have this faith in that God is alive and well, even in this sophisticated world of today. It's a faith that since the beginning of time, God loved us, and that love has never waned. It has never slowed down. It has never disappeared. We saw and knew that in Jesus Christ as a sign that this God we love and trust could not let us go. Jesus was God's ultimate sign that God's bond with humanity is true and strong, and not just a relic of times long since past, but exists today, despite our best efforts to wallpaper over it with a vast number of distractions. But still, people ache to discover this holiness, this wonder, this soul-prodding presence, the presence of God, even in this modern and complicated world, just as much on a remote island off of Ireland, or in forests of this province, or cathedrals in